Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Unlike a lot of radio and TV personalities, David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation, only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I'm going to be talking to, well, to business owners, but I also want to talk to individuals, employees. I want to talk to people that have some challenges with their spending habits and credit card debt. So we've got a nice little mix of topics today, and you can tell I'm excited. I'm about to bust at the seams, to be honest with you. Dr. Michael McCall is going to be my guest today, and he is the professor and chair of marketing law, Ithaca College. And the website for our program today is faculty.ithaca.edu. Dr. Michael McCall, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to our chat.
Oh, I'm very excited. You already know because we talked before we got you on the program. There's so much we can talk about. I'm not going to attempt to tell everybody about you because I would like you to kind of fill in the background because you have done so much. Give my listeners a little bit of background and then we'll point that fire hose at a couple of important subjects to help them understand.
I have a doctorate in social psychology and statistics. I'm currently a professor and chair of the marketing department. And my research interests as of late have focused largely around the value proposition that comes from a customer reward program. Prior to that, I worked, we did some studies on tipping. We've done some work with consumer spending and credit, as well as looking at, you know, the kind of unique area of rebate programs. So essentially, what I do is look at consumer psychology and basically how is it that people come to the decisions that they make, and are they generally happy with them?
And would it be fair to say that those decisions are not always logical?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, many of the decisions are not logical, but they seem to make sense at the time.
They feel logical. They make sense at the time.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, for a quarter more, why wouldn't I get the 4-gallon jug of soda pop at the movie theater?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And then you walk out with still a lot left over. The real interesting one, the one that I've always found to be fascinating, is the one where if you're allowed to purchase gas for $3.79 a gallon with a 10% charge for credit, as opposed to $3.89 a gallon with a 10-cent discount for cash, theoretically, those are the same numbers. But in fact, choice B is selected every time.
We just love it. And you know,
we love discounts.
We love discounts. And of course, the old joke or adage that, you know, you can save yourself into bankruptcy with, I'm saving money. No, you're spending money. It's difficult. It's just, but it's something about it that we, I don't know, does it go back to the hunter-gatherer mentality? Whatever it is, though, we just love that. And that the thing that drives me bonkers, but it is just the world we live in, is that, especially with gas, is that $3.99, $99, $99, $99, like how many decimal points can we take it out to? Just call it $4.
Well, the reason we don't do that is because $3.99 sounds better.
Exactly. Exactly.
It sounds better.
So, you know, I know we can go in a lot of different directions, Dr. McCall, but I really am fascinated, and I'm going to be candid and say there's a lot of self-interest here because I'm really fascinated with your work in the, and this is for our business owners, including me, is the work you've done in increasing your customer evaluation of value. In other words, how do you as a business owner or company add the most value and be competitive in your marketplace for, you know, for the same dollars, in other words. In other words, I don't want to be the cheapest provider of financial planning service. That's not my goal. I want to be the best provider, be competitive on price, but be the best provider. So how do I communicate that to my customers, to my potential customers?
I think that's the critical question. I think most businesses, if not all businesses, face exactly that specific issue. And the idea comes down to really understanding who your customers are, not simply the fringe ones, but your core customer group. And what is it that they really need? What is it that they want? And you can look at it in a variety of different ways. The key is, in terms of this value proposition, is really to understand what does the customer appreciate that also doesn't cost you, the firm, a ridiculous amount of money. One of the examples we use in loyalty programs. Now, if you've ever traveled to Las Vegas, Las Vegas is a very interesting city for a lot of strange reasons. But one of the things that's important in Las Vegas is status. Everybody wants to believe they're somebody.
Yes.
So, if I'm a hotel operator, I could give you a $50 discount on a room. You'd probably take it. I'd take it. And that might feel pretty good. The thing of it is, though, if the customer is really all about status, rather than discounting the room and working on price, making them price sensitive, why not have a guy in a tuxedo pick him up at the airport and drive him back in a limo? Probably cost you nothing. $10.
A lot less than discounting the room a couple hundred dollars.
Exactly. And everybody looks in at the limo and says, wow, they must be important. You show up at the hotel, that person's important. At the same time, the person in the car feels important. And it cost you nothing, but you've really tapped into what's important to the consumer at that point in time.
I love it. You've even stirred the pot and had people thinking, what did he do? Or what is it there? And you create a lot of buzz.
Exactly. And I think across a variety of different firms, if you go into a hotel, if you're in the upper tier status, a special check-in or a special check-out, something that makes the customer feel like, I want to come back here. I want to come to this place and do my business with you. That's the critical question facing most industries today.
You know, I had that happen at a hotel not long ago where for some reason I had gotten points or something and I got bumped into a level I don't usually pay for. And all of a sudden I was getting checked in. They took me upstairs to check in. I was like, wait a minute, what happened to the hotel lobby check-in? And I was up, next thing you know, I was up at a different level checking in. I'm like, and they knew who I was when I walked in.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you guys, you're ruining me is what you're doing. This is going to be my experience from now on when I come to your hotel. And it didn't cost them that much to do that.
Right. And that's, you know, one of the things when we work with hotels, we often say, you know, if you give your better customers and recognize who they are and give them an upgrade if it's available. It's a room they're going to take anyway. So you might as well. And it buys a lot of goodwill.
Yes, because I remember which hotel that is. And I know that when it comes time to make a choice, I'm hoping, hey, I hope that happens again. Because it just makes it easy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of, you know, you can do this in a whole host of different industries. If you're a fairly loyal car buyer and you buy your cars from the same firm every several years or whatever, they can send people out to pick up your car whenever it needs service. They can add those little touches simply by understanding what it is the customer really appreciates.
I love it. Dr. Michael McCall is our guest today, and I have to remind myself that I am interviewing you because I'm falling into listening to you, Dr. McCall. Very interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back for more.
Sounds good.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back with Dr. Michael McCall, and he's helping us understand consumer psychology. And before we continue, Dr. McCall, I want to just point out to our consumers out there, we're not trying to trick you. We're just trying to let you know we appreciate you, and we want you to see the difference between us and the other guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're not trying to trick anybody, and we just want people to know that they are valued, because at the end of the day, we all want to be important, and so we do what we do because of that very often. So you mentioned earlier consumer, you called them, was it a VIP program,
right,
or rebates and all of that. So how does that work? Do people see a value there, and how does that integrate? How does a business look at that and understand the implementation of that?
Okay, that's an excellent question, David. One of the things that we find really is that we have people, I mean, again, we were talking about people appreciating status and value. One of the things about discounting, all right, is if you use coupons. Remember, a number of years back, firms decided they were getting rid of coupons and the customers rebelled. The idea behind coupons and rebates is that you only get the discount if you do something special and extra.
Mm.
All right? And so what's really the interesting question here is when you ask people, and I do this in rooms all the time with both execs as well as the undergraduates, when we walk in and say, so what does price mean to you? And almost invariably, people say things like, price means quality. And I said, okay, that's wonderful. But if you lower price, what have you done to quality?
Mm.
What have you done to value? Okay? And the idea is that for a lot of reasons, offering sales from a firm standpoint is generally a bad idea.
Well, we don't offer sales here, I can tell you that. I'd rather look for ways to add more value,
exactly,
than to reduce price. Because when, you know, and I haven't said this in a long time, but there was a 18th century social critic, John Ruskin, and he said, there's nothing in the world that some man can't make a little worse and sell a little cheaper, and those who consider price only are this man's lawful prey.
Exactly.
And so we don't want to go there, and we want to focus on value added. Now, when you talk about loyalty, mm-hmm, programs, how does that work? Is that something that businesses should really take a hard look at? Because obviously, it almost creates a partnership of value with the consumer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that firms seem to get wrong is that they believe that their loyalty program is all about repeat patronage. Okay? You think it's just because they come back and do business with you. As an example, I have a friend who belongs to a particular airline program. And she will tell everybody that she knows what a horrible airline it is and never to fly with them.
That's not what we want.
Why is it that you fly with them then? And she says, because I have 400,000 miles with them, I have to.
Wow.
So the idea here is to really move, I mean, for our loyalty program, the firm needs to move beyond simply repeat patronage. You want those people telling other people, you should go to this firm. You should do business with these people. I like doing business with them.
Well, now that really brings me to another thing I think a lot of businesses struggle with, and that is, how can they reward their current customers for recommending their friends come to see them?
Well, you know, there are a number of those kinds of things that are out there now, kind of the referral programs, and those have some limited value.
Okay.
But it's really, I mean, I think what's really interesting now, and we did a paper on this, I think it was last year. We're all familiar with the typical phrase of caveat emptor, the notion that let the buyer beware.
Mm.
And so we have this basic idea that, you know, you can complain about the quality of service you received or your room or the cleanliness. You can complain, but it's really up to the firm to decide how to respond to that.
True.
Now, however, that whole landscape has changed.
Mm.
All right, we have sites like TripAdvisor.
True.
We have sites like OpenTable and other places for reviews, and that you can tell thousands of people what you think about the firm before you've even left the property.
Well, I went on a trip, and I went to TripAdvisor. I went and looked at the property.
Exactly. And so the idea there is now firms need to be proactive. The way they can handle this process is to really understand what the buzz is and what people are saying about their property, about their restaurant, about their dry cleaning business. You can go online, and in fact, some of the better companies are the ones that are out there and actually proactively responding and, you know, saying thank you and trying to address both the positive and the negative comments that are being said about their business.
I love it. Dr. Michael McCall, consumer psychology on steroids. I love it. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
I told you we'd be right back. Dr. Michael McCall is our guest. Don't want to keep him waiting because he's weighing in and helping us understand consumer psychology for all those business owners out there. And also, pray for everybody to understand how this works. And, you know, you mentioned before the break, Dr. McCall, about kind of the feedback with so many different resources being available, how quickly we can provide feedback on our experience and let other people know if we had a good or bad experience with hotels or resorts or whatever. Another place where there is a very measurable and deliberate feedback is in this whole thing that falls under the category of tipping in restaurants or for services. So I'm very, very curious about that subject because I find myself, to be candid, I find myself that I always do tend to be a bit of a heavy tipper when somebody's done a good job. But if not, then I'm like, you know, okay, you're barely going to get the minimum. But because, you know, I feel like if you're spending money, you should have a good experience. And but when somebody does do something, I want them to know, hey, good for you. And I hope you keep doing. I want to really affect them. So sort that all out for us. put me on the couch and sort me out here.
I guess one of the first questions I would ask is, you indicated that you are a heavy tipper. Did you once work for tips?
I never did.
Okay.
I mean, except I worked at the grocery store when I was 16, 17, and I might have gotten a tip once in a while for tearing the groceries out, but not as my primary compensation.
Okay, because one of the things we do find is that people who have worked for tips in the past do tend to tip on the higher side of average.
So they know what it feels like.
They know what it feels like, and ideally they also know what you can hold the counter, the server accountable for.
Okay.
And, you know, one of these really interesting things about service, it's called the service paradox, which is, we talk about it in our marketing classes. And that is, oftentimes, customers will leave a service encounter, say at a restaurant, more satisfied if something went wrong and it was corrected than if nothing went wrong before.
How about that?
So, in fact, if you think about it, restaurants can mess up just using restaurants as an example. They can make a lot of mistakes, but it's what they do to fix them that changes the experience.
Well, and that goes back to everybody wants to be important. They make a mistake and they don't fix it, then we take it personally.
Exactly.
Golly, I've done that once or twice.
And so, in fact, that's what we find. I mean, I think what happens with a lot of what we find in the tipping literature is that there are a variety of things that servers can do. In fact, there was a paper out there that talks about 20 scientifically proven ways in which you could improve your tips. But the real question there is, what are the certain themes around that? And a lot of it involves personalizing the experience with the customer. There's a lot there. And I think, you know, one of the things that we found when we started looking at larger bodies of literature on tipping, we found that for many people, it's a math problem. But if something goes really well or really bad, that can significantly impact the tip. So for many people, you say, well, I tip on service. Well, at the end of the day, unless it was really good or really bad, there's a fairly defined range that you tip within.
And what, just maybe for people who are not as familiar, what is the studies show are these ranges that you're talking about?
I think among older consumers, it's typically fallen around 15%.
Okay.
But when you talk to younger consumers, it's getting up around 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And you know, you wonder, if it really is a math problem, 20% is probably easier to calculate than 15.
It is. Double the number, move the decimal point.
Right. So, you know, the question is, you know, is that driving probably some of it? But I also think that, you know, there are things that certainly drive the tipping, that someone's taking care of you. Someone's introducing themselves by name. Someone's there to fix something that might go wrong. And again, it's that whole personalization, making the customer feel important.
Here's a question that I've always wanted to ask, and so thank God you're here, Dr. McCall. The cultural standard is we wait till the very end of the meal,
right. And
then we give them the tip. And very often, we've left the tip, and they don't even know what we've tipped them until we're gone.
Correct.
Okay. Why isn't it, or why can't it be, that we say when we sit down, they come up and say, hi, I'm Joe, I'll be taking care of you. Hi, Joe, I'm David. I'm very glad you're here. We'd like to have a fantastic dining experience tonight. I'm going to give you your tip in advance.
You know, that would be very nice.
Or I'll give you half of it now. And if you do a great job, I'm going to match what I just gave you.
You know, that's a great, that would be a great approach, I think. That would certainly
I want you to fawn all over me and my wife and lavish us with attention and then know when not to. I don't know. I just feel like the paradigm is, it's backwards. I mean, I was on vacation with my family and a young woman did a great job of helping us. And she did all the things you just described. And I gave her a very heavy tip because I wanted her to know, and I could tell it was going to make a difference. And the way things worked out, I was in the car going down the road before she even got the tip.
Well, you know, you raise a real interesting question about the whole origin of tipping. Part of it, by the way, there's one sort of an aside. I know one of my students explained how she was very embarrassed. Her father went into a restaurant and put money on the table and says, here's your tip, and every time you screw up, I'm taking money away.
Oh, God.
She was horrified by that. But, you know, there are two sorts of stories about what the origin of tipping is. And one of them people like, the other one's probably true.
Let's do this. Before you do, let me grab a quick break. Dr.
Okay.
Michael McCall is our guest today, and he is just drilling down to what we really want to know. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back with Dr. Michael McCall. Website, faculty.ithaca.edu. And you're getting ready to describe a little bit more about the tipping, Doctor.
Yes. So the idea is that there's two stories about how tipping originated. One people like, and the other one's probably more true.
Hmm.
The first one, the one that people like, is that TIP is actually an acronym that refers to ensure promptness. And as Ori goes, very much like you and I were just chatting, customers in English pubs would supposedly clip coins to their servers' garments in order to ensure better service throughout the evening. All right? So that's the story that people has kind of grown, or the legend that's grown around this. The other one, and I think this one probably is more valid, is that when families would travel across Europe during, you know, older times, and they would visit castles, and they would visit, you know, just basically stay in these, you know, elaborate mansions, that in fact they recognized that it would put additional burdens on the servers and on the maid staff and caretakers.
Okay.
And that at the end of their stay, they would then present them with gifts to sort of thank them for all of the extra service that they received.
That makes sense.
Right. And so what you're suggesting is, you know, maybe if we put some money out there in front, we would ensure the promptness, as opposed to, and then at the end, rewarding what we've got.
Well, exactly. And I guess, you know, and to be honest, also, I have to then answer the question, too, why am I tipping? Do I have to be there to see the tip? You know, again, we all want to be important, right?
Right.
So I want them to say thank you. I mean, I did you a nice turn of service there. I'm saying thank you for what you did for me, and I'm going to be expecting a thank you back.
Well, I think, you know, they've done the service. You know, there's a couple of explanations. You have a couple of interesting ones there. One is that it's a reciprocity. I do a favor
right.
for you, and then you come back with a favor for me. An alternative one is sort of, you know, we might look upon the service field, for instance, people who work in restaurants, et cetera, who are working for less than minimum wage, and we feel that, you know, they're working hard. So in order to be fair, let me help them out. And sort of this kind of equity, fairness kind of
issue. Social justice thing.
Right. And then again, you know, the other part of it is that it becomes sort of a cultural norm. It's an expectation, and we feel that we need to do it out of some sort of social obligation that we've been taught.
And it's also, and I don't doubt this to be true, but it's also asserted that the prices are what they are because that person has paid a certain amount that does not include an adequate compensation for their services. Therefore, that's why you tip.
Exactly.
So it's all balled up in all of that.
Yeah, and there's a whole host of different explanations that probably all have some truth to them, but there isn't really one overarching one other than, you know, the customer wants to feel important, then when you do that, you get a certain reward for it.
And I think that's really the bottom line with our discussion is whatever service somebody's providing, whatever value that they are getting across, the two things are married together, that people want to be valued and be important. Therefore, what you do has to have a high value.
Right.
The fact has to match the feeling.
Yes, and I think it has to be better than what the competition is offering. I mean, that's the real hard question is, what is it that I offer why would a customer choose me as opposed to my competition? What is it that I offer that the guy down the street doesn't? And when you can answer that question, then you've kind of captured what that value proposition is.
And that's where the logic or the illogic may come in. There might be, I might be, say I am competing either knowingly or unknowingly with another financial planner down the street, Dr. McCall, and, and maybe I've got all the credentials and I've got all the different types of strategies that are going to work really well for that person, and I've got a great team and we're going to take really good care of them. But maybe there's something that that person does in terms of their, the way they recognize the person, or they have something about their charisma, something else about that personal engagement, and they got no credentials and they got no experience, but they win the client.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think what it is, you know, if you think about it, financial planning, you know, why would somebody choose you? It's because they like that personal touch.
Exactly.
Okay? And you're going to be there, and if they have a question, they're not going to get 15 different answering machines or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, a friend of mine who works in insurance came to me once. He said, and this was, and I thought, an interesting question of his. He said, you know, I sell insurance. It's personal. All right. The reason they're coming to me and not going to one of the larger, you know, storefront, you know, brick and mortar places is because I provide a personal touch. He said, but I got to put people on hold. What do you think I should do? And we agreed that since he's a sports fanatic, we would feed in ESPN Sports to his answering machine, because that's what resonated with them about him. He's a sports guy who does their insurance. And while they're waiting, what makes it better? Well, listening to sports.
Wow. Okay. So it's any of those things, and all of that is really getting to the consumer. So we got just a minute or two here left, Dr. McCall. Any final advice for the business owners listening to the program? Hey, as our economy hopefully continues to improve, there's still a lot of challenges out there, but how can business owners position themselves going forward? What would you say? Hey, here, one, two, three things to really be focused on.
Okay. I would say the first one is to listen to the customer. Find a way to listen to the customer, both the ones you have and what your competition's customers are saying. So that, I think, would be certainly number one. The next one, and I think we're living in a wonderful age right now, there's an enormous amount of information or data about customers. If you think about what your grocery store knows about you, if you think about what Best Buy knows about you, there's a whole rich database that very few firms are able to tap into at this point. And the data is just going bigger and bigger. I mean, the whole concept of big data these days is really that there's a ton of information about consumers, many of which they don't even know they're sharing. And so the idea there is really the firm that gets to that airspace first and can truly understand all the information, what their customers want from the data, is probably going to have a competitive advantage. So those would be probably the top recommendations.
Yeah. Well, go back to what we said, to convey what you want to convey to, as a business owner, with a business, that the customer is important. You have to, as you just said, know who that customer is.
Right. Exactly.
And you do that by listening to them, understanding them, and, you know, understanding how they relate to each other. There's a lot there. Wow. Okay. Dr. Michael McCall has been our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. We are out of time, and we are very appreciative of his time on the program. Dr. McCall, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed the chat.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.